Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, okay. Here we go. It's match day.
Mark Cucurella! Mark Cucurella drinks Australia, he's paella, yes, fucking massive! 1, 2, 3, 4! Mark Cucurella! Mark Cucurella drinks Australia, he's paella, yes, fucking massive!
Yes,
it's match day special time. We're at Lewis Station. We've had one or two drinks, nothing more. I'm here with Cher and Robert Plant. Robert Plant, also known as Duncan. What do you think about today's game? And well, are you coherent now after we had quite a few beers already?
Well, it was good.
We went to the Lockhart Tavern in the Hayward Heath. Very good.
Sorry about that. Yeah, go on.
Just loving it. It's classic end of season, last home day, where we've all had a brilliant time. Late kickoff, plenty of beers, and we're here in Hayward Heath Station.
No, we're not. We're at Lewis Station.
Oh, we are at Lewis. Yeah. Okay,
We were there, but we moved on, you see, this is the space-time continuum. The space-time continuum dictates that we do move on from one place to another.
Indeed, we were at Hayward Heath. But is,
and you do look like Robert Plant with your gingery blondie wig.
I've got
sorry,
a
gingery
wig.
Blondie beard and a black pubic wig. It looks great.
Well, thanks for that. Just absolutely brilliant day out, classic weather for the end of the season, and you could have won.
Are we going to win tonight?
Yeah, of course we are.
Unbelievably, I'm rooting fully for the Sussex contingent here. Littlehampton, we're in the FA Vars today. We all want them to win, don't we? A Sussex team.
Absolutely.
We've unbelievably managed to find the only person you could possibly find who's an Albion fan who's supporting bloody Newport Pagnell. Because he lives near there. He lives there. And it's Wedge. You are supporting, well, you were supporting Newport Pagnell, because you live near there.
I live near there.
A little village called Little Crawley, which has nothing to do with Sussex.
The whole town has been festooned with grey and white all week. We've driven down the motorway today. Every other car was a Newport Pagnell green and white. Stars hanging out the roof.
Well, they're bunting in Littlehampton as well.
3-0 win over LA. Absolutely fantastic. We've got Jim Bowen behind us here. Go and interview Jim Bowen.
Look at what you could have won.
we got Duncan to be chatted to. Also in Wicks, we have Dominic and Alistair. Alistair, you're looking like an oven scourer. You're looking like an oven scourer. But you're looking sexy in that one.
I'm feeling a bit like Brian May. I'm ready to crack open the national anthem on top of Buckingham Palace right at the moment. And in fact, on the way down from Manchester this morning, as I was coming past Heathrow and Windsor Castle, I saw a Lancaster bomber doing circles around the M25 as we were sort of sitting in traffic. But no, I'm really excited about the final match of today. What a great season we've had. It's just been It's been a fantastic season.
What a bunch of wankers.
Yeah, so much so that I only got to bed about 4 o'clock this morning in Manchester.
Brilliant.
After having taken my daughter to a gig, and now I'm here in Brighton. Well, in Lewis.
Ready to tell the bloody truth, right? Last night, he was at the MK Dons Stadium watching fucking My Chemical Romance.
With
he's 63 years old. He should not be allowed into a gig like that. He should be better. Look, all the hair's falling off and everything.
He should be allowed out, should he? He shouldn't be allowed out at all.
Shouldn't be allowed out. No.
Alistair's been stopped royally here. He hasn't got the words for this.
Yeah,
I'm
not a day over 62.
Are you going back today as well?
Unfortunately, yes. I'm working tomorrow. It's just a long day. Not very good for my carbon footprint.
So you travelled down
this morning. I really apologise. That's part of our carbon budget I've used. But
you travelled down this morning and go back today.
I drove down this morning.
Wow. That's
today.
Commitment. That's commitment.
Yeah. Well,
fair play.
It had to be done. Last fair game play. Of the season, all that. Yeah.
Right. Now, there's a bit of an exciting story here. On the old bomb board, Brighton official message board, I know Wedge, I know you, Alistair, I know John, who we're going to speak to in a minute, from
2004.
That. And we've got polo shirts to commemorate that.
And they've got, you
that,
haven't.
Yeah, all three of them have got it on. They didn't give me the memo, so I'm not here with that shirt on. Yeah,
you're not in the club.
Russell, it's all right. We're used to you letting us down, so try not to worry.
You've got a baker's dozen.
Yeah, exactly. I am, yeah. We've heard from Wedge and his belligerence. We've heard from Alistair. John, over to you, John. What are you thinking about today and the season?
Splendid, really.
Yeah.
Home form has been a bit average, but yeah.
cigars and brandy, sir.
Come on, man. This is going to be broadcast across.
Fucking shit.
No, it's been,
home form's been pretty poor, but overall, I think it's not too much to complain about.
Yeah, the home form has been comically appalling, hasn't it?
I mean,
really?
Home form is much to complain about.
Yeah.
To be
fair. I'll blame it all on bottle tops and fluffs.
I know some people that have been to every game this season. Bradders, if you're listening, one of them. He's been to every game. What a season to be an away fan.
Get a job, for Christ's sake.
Alan, you had a fall earlier, but you're okay now.
I fell over his flip-flops.
He's on the beach already before the team are. Alan?
I've got my flip-flops, I've got my shorts, Alan, I've got my T-shirt. I'm so happy. It's a lovely sunny day.
Show us your slash.
Listen, I am really pleased about this season. I really want to say one thing. Look, people keep on saying about the four last minute goals that we scored, and that's worth 1 point. They're saying, okay, you know, that's because we got where we are. But think about the 11 draw games?
Yeah.
15 draw games. Yeah. Imagine if five of those games, which we should have won,
we'd be in Europe.
We'd be in Europe now, because that's 2 points.
Going on a European tour.
Next year! You're right, though. Fine margins.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's like the old Morgan and Wise thing. We played the right note, but wrong in the wrong order. I mean, at the end of the day, see, we got the points, but in the wrong order, maybe.
Yeah. And our third and final bewigged man, along with Alistair and Duncan, is Dom. Dom, you look like Alan's nan, according to Alan.
Yeah. I take that as a compliment.
I think it's meant as a compliment. You're looking very sexy.
Thank you very much.
The ginger beard and eyebrows with a black wig is...
It's your cake?
Yeah. It's a really tough wing.
That's on the podcast now. Wonderful.
Please, let's mention that he said tough, not impossible. So...
I'm determined.
There's always a way for everyone. Anyway, Tom, what's your thoughts on the season and the day and anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, it's been a tremendous season. It's been a fucking tremendous season.
I think it has,
the away games have been absolutely great. Home form has been disappointing, can't lie. Obviously that game against Man U, what a game.
Oh, that made up for it.
To be fair, I really did enjoy the home game against Leicester, which we won 3-2 in the end. That was a cracker. As well. Not as much as the Man U game, but away days.
Yeah.
And just in general, the season has been absolutely cracking.
Spot on. I think those sentiments spot on. I've noticed Alan, by the way, go back to you, you've got a T-shirt saying fat face. I take personal offence at that, a T-shirt.
My face is bigger than your face. Don't worry about it.
Are you insulting yourself as well, though, you're saying?
No, I was saying to my wife, actually. My wife said, you put on a bit of weight there. I said, that's down to Russell, because he's taking me out for beers and food.
Well, that's good, because I've been blaming my weight gain on you.
Anyway, taking each other out on dates, then you know.
I mean, Alan's wearing a turquoise top. Dom is the only person who's not wearing blue. He's wearing the what's it called? Hyper Turk, isn't it?
Hyper Turk. Yeah.
Are you feeling hyper in your Turk?
I am rather. Yes. Yeah. It may be the beer, but yeah.
That's a great. It's a great kit, this is a great shirt.
And so I thought, you know, last game of the season, I'd crack this bad boy out. Yeah.
And finally, third kit, I think, for next season. Do we know what we're getting for our new away kit or a new home kit? Are we seeing it today?
I think they're going to unveil tonight.
Are they unveiling today?
The new home kit.
They're doing it for the Man City game.
I do like an unveiling, don't you?
Unveil. But it would have been leaked by now, surely. Because I think it was leaked before the Man City game by now. I mean, I've had too many beers, so I'm not looking online, so someone else can, but yeah.
I could barely hold this phone up to me.
Nice tits, shame about the face.
man boobs and a Brian May wig. What could go wrong?
I was watching that. Someone posted something about some of the fantastic goals. I mean, this year we've actually scored some brilliant goals this year.
A lot of goals
which were actually goals of the season.
Two and one goals. The third goal against Man United.
When I was watching, I would say probably the best goal that we scored was probably the Trossard goal at Liverpool.
Yeah.
When Sanchez passed the ball out wide to Cucurella, and then he passed it, and then I think Lallana kind of dummied it or something. Lallana picked it up,
yeah.
And then it was just an amazing goal. And when you look at where Van Dijk was, he was completely floundered. He was.
This is Van Dijk. He's never floundered.
It was unbelievable. That was probably the best goal we scored this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a really good shout, actually. Yeah, I think it's been underrepresented.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah. And it has been a fantastic season. 4-0 against Man United, a 2-0 comeback draw at Liverpool. You know, some of the games we've had, the position we've been in the table for most of the season, we've been above Palace nearly every week this season, and we just need 1 point to guarantee that today. Maybe even a point isn't needed, who knows for that. But we would like to get the draw, we would like to get the win, just in case Brentford thrash Leeds, which we're hoping would happen, as long as we win, to finish top off. It's all exciting, isn't it? It's been brilliant, and we can step on and on from there.
If we win today, we'll only be 4 points away from a European position.
And that, given the points you just talked about, the way we talked about, that tells you how well we're doing.
We've got 56, and if we win today, we have 51 there, 56. So basically, that's 4 points away from West Ham, who will get a European conference position.
And who will miss out on a European place, or a Europa League place, if we prevent them from winning.
So the lineups are out.
Yeah, we've got the lineup. So Dominic, back to you.
Sanchez, Webster, Dunk, Lartman,
Murray,
Cucurella, Basuma, March, Casado,
Butters,
Murray,
Kuipers,
Carpenter,
Richard
Tamora, Gross, and Welbeck,
Alan Navarro,
Hart,
Alan Navarro.
Where's Johnny Crump in Football Junior?
He's on the bench.
Football Junior.
Johnny Crump, football genius.
Yeah, so Caicedo, McAllister, going back to that. So Sanchez is a goal, and then we've got, what is it again?
Webster, Duncan, Veltman. Cucurella, Basuma, March, Caicedo, McAllister, Gross, and Welbeck.
I'm happy with that.
The same
lineup. Navarro.
Navarro. Yeah.
Just speaking of which, we ran in on the way to Liverpool once. We got off the bus, didn't we? And Kevin McLeod, was it his uncle, was on the bus monitoring the buses. He goes, Kevin was playing for you. I said, oh, who was that? Kevin McLeod. He goes, Yeah. Couldn't really say anything complimentary. But anyway, there we go. So, we're at Lewis, we're about to get the train. We've had a few beers, haven't we, Duncan? And very quickly, we're not at Hamesmead. We were there. Just a quick word to the place we're in, which you recommended, Duncan. Quick word about that.
Oh, Lockhart Tavern. Oh, yeah. Amazing.
What a great place.
Lockhart Tavern.
Lovely girls serving at the bar.
Absolutely amazing beers, amazing food.
Best pork I've ever had.
I can agree with that.
And great wine. Great wine.
But that's another story.
The wine is really good, according to Duncan.
Where was your best pork?
Duncan's a wine man, by the way.
What's
that? Sumptuous breast of chicken. That's right.
And the Yorkshire pudding was like the Queen's crown to celebrate the Platinum Jubilee.
The Jubilee. Oh, you can't beat a good Jubilee, can you?
Can't beat a bit of royalism.
Anyway, lads, we're going to be on our way.
We're almost on our way.
That's a grim image. Oh, we love you, the Sussex boys. In white and blue. Oh, blue.
Sussex boys, we're going there, guys.
We're the front end, boys.
Or not, depending on the results.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't scan, does it?
It's a bright way to plug it up.
We'll probably be alright at the end of it.
We are Brighton! Soon! Brighton from the south. We are Brighton, Super Brighton. We are Brighton from the south.
Let's have an old classic, a long lost classic.
Oh, say hello,
Well, Alan, what's the favourite Bowie Lampy one? How's it going? Starman.
Oh, yeah, he's a Starman.
Man running down the right. His name is Tarek Lampy and he's fucking dynamite.
There's a Starman running down the right. His name is Tarek Lampy and he's fucking dynamite. There's a Starman running down the right.
His name is Eric Lampy
and he's fucking dynamite. Oh, man! Are we there yet? We're going to give a Saturday afterwards, right? We already have, haven't we? Right, I've got to get one bit with you, Kevin. Doing the podcast stuff. I know I don't like to impose. 82, 83 minutes in. Come from behind with 2-1 up. How are you finding this?
It's comical. Pascal goes. Yeah. So the new year on his contract, if not 2 years.
There's rumours he'll stay. We were thinking we want you to stay. Do you reckon he will stay?
No, he will stay. He's got to stay. Goes through a contract to relieve the press. And he's played well. Lovely choice terms. Worth the admission money alone for those.
He's done two or three today, hasn't he?
He's played really well. And
just watching a late West Ham attack there. West Ham have been, you know, quite disappointing really, on the basis that they really built.
But they're top six, aren't they?
On the basis that
they haven't looked top six.
They really need to
win for
Europa, and they've been quite negative really.
Yeah.
Moyes has shoved two late substitutions on. Yeah. Not quite sure who they are, but he obviously believes in them. I just hope the Albion can hold out for a deserved win really.
Yeah. Come from behind win would be delicious. All sorts of shenanigans going on elsewhere. Can you believe the title race? We're finding out City were 2-0 down to Villa, now 2-1 down. Liverpool are drawing with Wolves.
And now place is
done. Lead time back at the Amex.
Getting the wig on. And now playing is
one. Correa to Morpay, who's been the sub for the last 15 minutes or so. What's he going to do? Back to Cuckoo. Can we get it in the box? We'll stay with us for a moment for this dramatic, dramatic moment. Lamptey drills one in from distance, just over. Amazing. I've got to get your views on it, John. I'm doing the podcast. Now, you've been coming here for years and years. You've had a season ticket for years. You're from Eastbourne, but you do have an affiliation with West Ham, don't you?
Being a West Ham supporter, I think all the goals are offside.
Come on, you've got to admit, we deserve this.
Yeah, you deserved it. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. And it is your second team. How long do you reckon it needs to go before it becomes your first team? Is it the next 5 seconds? It might be right now. John, if we score now, you have to affiliate yourself with us. Here we go. Balls in the box. Oh! Chipped in. Well back. Tame header at the goalie. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine? Yeah. Anyway, over these years, it's been a pleasure having a chat with you, having a seat, having a talk, having a natter about football.
I've never seen West Ham win.
And you've never seen West Ham win here, which is an absolute comfort to me
and a
joy.
At this place, anyway.
Yeah.
I remember beating them at the Goldstone, though.
Yeah, well, if you're going to away games in the modern era, don't expect anything more. As Sanchez collects the ball in from the side. He's taken his time. We've got, according to the clock, 4 minutes to go. Plus stoppages. Albion winning 2-1. As it stands, the Albion are going on to 51 points.
That's right.
We're already on a record score, but that's pretty good, isn't it? You must have, through the years, you've been watching this since the Championship and everything else.
This is the best title, you know, best.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's brilliant. We've been good, haven't we?
Still offside, though.
If you say so. And here we go. And Tariq is breaking through. He's beaten two or three players. Laid it inside. Oh! For a moment, it looked like Morpay was slipping well back in. Central, just outside the box. And it was intercepted. Anyway, we're winning 2-1. And here come the songs again. Welbeck to Morpay. Go on, Mops. Ah, it's blocked again. Cuckoo. Cuckoo on the rebound. Chips it in. Welbeck too far. Who's that? Mwepu. Mwepu's got hold of it. Someone else. Ah, they've snuffed out the danger. But what a great final phase of the game for us. We're now 3 minutes from the end of stoppage time. We're 2-1 up. The ascendancy is still with us. And here we go. We're on the ball. Lamptey. Inside. Can't see who that was. Played to Morpay. Again inside. Grosh. Oh, it's McAllister. It was before. So, to McAllister. Back to Grosh. Webster. Back to Grosh. To Webster. We're just bossing the midfield at the moment. Chip ball forward. Welbeck. Is he going to make it? He's kept it in. But he's lost possession. And now it's back with the Albion. McAllister intercepts. Gone to Webster. Play forward. Got out of play. But listen to this. Oh. John's leaving. Unlucky, John.
See you next
time. See you next time. John from Eastbourne. As it stands, Kevin, we're on 51 points if we can hold this out. Do you think we'll hold out?
Do you think we could score again?
I think we will hold out.
I reckon it's 3-1 this game.
I think...
Kukureas, right in the face. Right in the face. His face down on the pitch. His hair is sprawled out another 5 yards.
He hasn't
moved
at all.
He's moving. He's taking a proper whack there, isn't he?
Most important thing is...
Well, and Pascal Gross announces man of the match with the sponsors.
Pascal Messi Gross.
He's brilliant, isn't he? He's done at least two of his little twists, hasn't he? Right. You gotta love him.
That's gotta be a free kick, surely, to Brighton.
Listen to this, Pascal Gross. We want you to stay. Here we go.
Brighton, 1 minute left, can't be much stoppage
time. What could go wrong?
Can't remember
any stoppage, really.
So it's got to be
minimal, surely. Well, exactly, yeah. Liverpool are now winning, by the way.
Wow.
Oh! City are winning 3-2. They score two more goals. City and Liverpool are both winning now. Unbelievable.
Two goals in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Liverpool, come on.
Fucking hell.
Come on, Brighton!
Meantime, back at the Amex. We're on the attack. Lamptey, Webster, Lamptey, forwards, Pascal gets it in the box. It's out for a corner. We got a corner. Yeah, please stay off the pitch at full time. Is a sign on the pitch, on the scoreboard. I don't know about you, Kevin. I'm paragliding down, aren't you?
I've got a zip wire in the
latch. Zip wire tassie.
Going into the 1901s in the
lane,
and then I'm on the pitch.
Right, here we go. Ball comes in. Webb, Wilbur. Welbeck has run down. He's celebrating with somebody. He's celebrating with someone down by the touchline, somewhere near the managerial area. What a goal. Beautiful cross, beautiful header, bottom corner. 3-1 up. We have top 10, Kevin. Top 10. Welbeck ran to somebody just to the left of the... And the West Ham fans are flooding out. See you later, you homophobic pricks. Anyway, Welbeck, when he scored, he ran straight back down towards the area directly to the left of where the manager is. Celebrated with somebody, I don't know who it was. Something significant. is brilliant. 3-1, amazing atmosphere, top half guaranteed, 3-1 win over West Ham. They never beat us. They never beat us. And now our home form's actually looking all right for a change. Anyway, there we go. 3-1 win today. Top half. What a day. More features, more opinion coming up soon. But just have a listen to this. Podcast. What do you think about today and the season in general for the Albion?
Well, the season in general is just, well, it's just been fast, isn't it? Best ever finish.
Yeah.
There's been multiple standout players, I've got to be honest. I don't think anyone's really had a bad season. And today, I've got to be honest, we just sort of tore apart.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of their attacking threat was taken away by the fact that we were dealing with every ball coming into the box. Feltman was winning every one-on-one with Mikel Antonio, so they really had sort of no threat up front. Let us sort of do what we wanted to do in the midfield and attack.
And we've had some struggles this season at home, haven't we? The away games have been brilliant. Yeah, we've been brilliant away from home. But at home it's been a struggle. The last couple of games have been superb.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen you here coming and going in this front row of the West Upper, along with Chalky, all the other people that you're coming with, and you must have thought at moments, you thought, could this get any worse? You know, watch as a home thing. Shoot, Bozo.
Christopher!
Mind the gap, Crystal Palace. Jack, anyway, it's a pleasure talking to you. All the best. See you next season.
See you later.
Yeah, you too.
See you.
See you. Kevin, final words from you as well.
Wonderful season. Great season. Well-deserved. Bit of a sticky patch in January and February, but away form, hopefully, the last two games against United and West Ham will be, follow through next season. I really think the crowd's important. The last two games, fantastic atmosphere against United. Today's been pretty good because we've seen some good stuff on the pitch. I just really wish that the home crowd could
good, you know, to be more vocal when we're playing well but not scoring the goals.
Yeah.
There's that element of people getting frustrated.
We're talking Leeds at home, Newcastle at home,
yeah, exactly.
Arsenal
get,
at home,
get behind them and,
you know, Norwich at home, all those games. You
know, it's almost always as if some people think, all right, entertainers type of thing. Yeah. And, but, you know, it's wonderful.
It's
they've done fantastic. And, yeah. And I think they'll do, you know, they'll do good business in the summer.
Yeah.
Hopefully the most players will stay. I'm hoping the Zuma will play, but I don't know. Maybe got the substitution of him this afternoon, an indication that he's fine elsewhere. But they've got able substitution, able replacements, I think. And I think the midfield, the last, you know, three or four games have been an absolute revelation because they hold an attacking threat and they hold a threat on the break as well, you know, which in the past, you know, quite haven't. Onward and upward.
Isn't it wonderful? And here we are, final game of the season. Everyone's staying pretty much. We're going to have the fans, have the players coming back out soon. There's a party atmosphere. Everyone's having a good time. There's someone in baggy 70s pyjamas.
Yeah,
and what can I can only describe as an orange dressing gown or a raincoat. Rock it on!
People in the 1901s that should have put
sunscreen
on earlier.
There's a very burnt shoulders, isn't there, Joe?
A little bit too long on the beach.
Rock it all! Hey! See you, mate, mum! What's your name again?
Sorry?
What's your name again? Do you want to go on the podcast? Go on, Pam, you're on the podcast.
I'm on the podcast.
Here we go.
Well, it's still breaking FIFA
regulations. Oh, no. Sumo's turned up with a prize.
Breaking FIFA regulations.
He's in the West Stand upper, front row, with a pint. Yeah, a disgrace.
Sorry, UEFA. Sorry, FIFA. I know you've been great for the game and you've been straight down the line and not corrupt, but I'm sorry I'll sneak to pint in. Tell me
it all. Listen, I know we've got nothing in particular to celebrate, but
finishing above the scum, mate.
Finishing above the scum. The only other time we've done this in a modern era, they beat us in a fucking playoff.
That's gone now. We're the better club.
This
mate.
Is it. Find the cap, you wankers.
They went in their 12-year history. We've just shown them who's the boss. 12-year club. Nothing club. Bye bye.
See. This is only going in one direction, mate, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Listen to this. There's a tiny, tiny black kid running around on the pitch.
Terry Lamptey!
Shiba records it, Terry Lamptey. Right, let's get your mum Pam in. Pam, let's get a word from you. So, you've had to cope with being Sibo's mum for all these years. How has that been, first of all?
Well, a challenge at times. But he's been an Albion fan, and so is his dad, and so is his forever.
He's a passionate man, he's a passionate fan. You're in the Albion top as well. How are you finding it?
I remember going to the Albion at the Goldstone all those years ago.
Same as me.
Absolutely lovely. Fantastic day, fantastic week.
What a day, what a season, what an era. 5 years, it's going to be six in the top right. Graham Potter, amazing, eh?
Absolutely incredible manager. He's been absolutely superb.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure meeting you, chatting with you, enjoying games with you. We'll pass it back to Shibo for a final word, but it's great chatting to you, Pam. sheets, they're all coming back onto the pitch.
Supper for table, we know what we are. We know what we are. We know what we are. Supper for table, we know what we are.
So here we are, a good 15, 20 minutes after the final whistle. The players are going around the pitch. They're coming towards the West Upper, where Alistair from Manchester is resigning for one game only. Your first time in the West Upper. You're wearing your Brian May wig as well. Yep. How have you found it?
Yeah, it's been great. Really good view from up here. I had to sit in the West Stand. I've sat in the East, the South and the North. I normally stand in the North. But yeah, really good. Lovely to come up here and see you. And here comes Graham Potter towards us. Yeah,
he's applauding the fans.
Fantastic.
Graham Potter leading them, applauding us. He's got the whole squad behind him, all the wags in tow as well. We want you to stay. Pascal Gross, we want you to stay. I mean, there's about 40 or 50 people on the pitch here, isn't there?
Yeah, lots of kids. There was one kid that we think it was Basuma's boy, dropped it in.
Yeah.
Oh no, or was it Lampetti's? Anyway, yeah, a great goal from the little ones there, you know, future talent in the academy.
The future!
But actually, that goal by Pascal Gross, a gross turn. Yeah. And a goal straight out of
it. Oh, amazing.
It was beautiful. And it was right in line with us where we're sitting right here, wasn't it? So it was a thing of beauty.
And West Ham has still not beaten us in the Premier League. Isn't that funny?
It's hilarious.
Just a quick message to the homophobes. Have a good trip home, boys. You are still living in the 1970s.
I can't believe that homophobia still exists in the game.
I was on the train today.
I was so pleased that we had that player from Blackpool come out.
Yeah.
Until we start having players come in, it needs to just become normal. It doesn't need to be something that we even talk about. It just needs to be like in the same way that I don't talk about what I've eaten for tea the night before, you know, just needs to be a next thing. But until it does, then we need to be advocates and we have to be supportive of people who are gay, players that are gay, or LGBTQ, QI plus, and all the others within the game. So.
Yeah. The Sumer is addressing the North Stands in a navy shorts and top outfit. He's doing his little jinking move. Oh yeah!
A little bit of banding on his right ankle there.
And Alistair, I've not seen you for a few weeks. We were talking about it in the pub earlier. I wasn't at Leeds, and neither were you. You weren't at the Man United home game. I was at Wolves, but you weren't there. You were at Newcastle and a couple other places. I wasn't there. I haven't seen you for a while.
I was at Arsenal. You weren't.
COVID. And then you missed the Spurs game.
Yeah.
However, between us, we've had quite a few good, enjoyable times, haven't we?
Done all right. Well, I think the team's probably done better than we have personally, but yeah.
Well, I put it all down to us, to be honest, yeah. And you're going back today. You are going back on the same day, back to Manchester.
Yeah, I drove down from Manchester this morning, left at 8, and hopefully I'll be back home before midnight. But if I'm not, then it'll be 1 o'clock, won't it?
Sure, that's a hell of a commitment, really, isn't it? We've been on the beers, and you've had to sit there watching us do that. That's not going to be easy, is it?
Yeah,
really?
No. But I'm going to have a nice Piglet's Pantry pie.
Yeah.
And listen to a podcast on the way home. Yeah. Maybe even one of these.
Yeah.
Who knows?
All I could say in finality is you've been spending the whole time here in the West Upper with your Kukurea wig on. There's hardly anyone around doing the same thing. You didn't seem to care.
It's getting a bit itchy and stretchy.
Well, we'll leave it there. Honestly, safe trip back. It's always great having a chat. I love you. You've been brilliant on the taking over on the match day specials when I've not been able to do it. Thank you for that,
it's been great to listen to the podcast through the year.
Yeah.
And all the best for the future for the podcast going forward.
Thank you very much. Thank you again, and these are for the good times, aren't they? We've got a sixth year in a row in the Premier League under a brilliant manager, playing brilliant football with great players.
Amazing.
including this man being sung about in the background, Mark Cucurella,
yes,
for whom you have the wig. On that note, we'll sign out. It's been a pleasure. See you later. Cheers. Here we go. Look, come on. Just a very quick chat, Chesh. Malcolm, Cheshire, as some of us know you, you've been behind me a couple of rows behind all the way through the Amex era. We've gone from the Championship into the Prem. We've settled in the Prem, and we are now thriving in the Prem, aren't we? Top half for the first time in our history, I think. Highest position, definitely, in our history. And highest points total in the Premier League era. What do you make of all that?
Well, it's just superb, isn't it? Tony Blues, he's had a vision. He says top 10.
Yeah.
And you think, how good is yeah. It's crazy, this guy. And, you know, despite some mean different results,
yeah,
top 10 he gets, you know.
Yeah.
So, Tony Blues has got promotion to the Premier League.
Yeah.
And we get promotion to Premier League, you know, a few years back. So, we just, you know, he's playing there. So,
it's sensational, isn't it?
I think it is great having, you know, a good management team, good director and chairman behind the club, really. And we were seeing as a chief.
See ya! Duncan has arrived on the scene.
So we're just seeing as a chief, you know, everything we set out to do. It's great.
It's been a great structure. We've deserved this, haven't we? It's been a build up of a number of things coming together, component parts.
It has, yes.
Plans towards our future. And this is, I think, the first major step that we could really see in what we can really do. We could step up with it. We could become regulars in the top half. I think that would be a not beyond the realms of possibility ambition.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Very much, yes. You know, I think as the gaffer would say, you know, it's Mr. Potter, let's see what happens next season, you know, and the next game, you know, let's not go too far ahead of ourselves. Next season to come, next game, the next season to come.
Yeah.
But yes, why can't we just go achieving what we are aiming to do, top half finish?
Yeah. And very quickly, Malcolm, just to quickly get a bit of background on you. You're an East Bourne man, aren't you? Well, you are now at the moment. Where are you from originally?
Berkshire.
Berkshire. Yeah. You're in East Bourne at the moment, is that?
Hastings.
Oh, Hastings.
Hastings, right.
Hastings.
The Far East.
Far East. House of the Rising Sun, you've been down here a few years, but you were called Cheshire by a number of us that know you, because you were living in that area
in Cheshire,
for a while.
Right, Cheshire,
you're one of a number of exiles. How have you found it since you've been back? You've been back a number of years now, but how have you found the difference? Coming back to Sussex, how's it been for you?
Football-wise, I definitely chose the right time because I moved down on that last year at Riddine, which of course was a promotion year, and since then it's being at the Amex, which has been, apart from a hypier season, but it's, other than that, it's been a good evenings at the Amex. So,
hippier season wasn't that great, was it?
No, it wasn't.
We've had some downs, but we've had a lot of ups, haven't we? It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure knowing you through these years. But it's been particularly good to have you just a couple of rows behind us, having known you all those years, and celebrating a number of good moments. Today's one of those, isn't it?
Definitely,
51
yes.
points, highest position, highest points table, and we've still never been beaten in the top flight in the Premier League era by West Ham, which is quite amusing.
True, yes.
Given their homophobia on the train today, on my way down, I'm particularly amused by that. Anyway, it's a pleasure getting you on. Let's get you back on at some point in the future.
Okay.
Well, I'll let you get away. I know you have to get away, but all the best and up the Albion.
Yes, very much up the Albion.
See you all.
The girl, mind the gap, Crystal Palace. Mind the gap, I say. Mind the gap, Crystal Palace. We're all going in one away.
So now, in the cold light of day, we sit on the following evening, Monday. Peter and I have been joined for this full match review of the game by Mr. Raymond Wright, the gent. Hello, Raymond.
Good evening, Russell, and or good afternoon, and to Peter. So this is the last season before we start gearing up for next season.
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. Yeah, we'll probably do some summer specials or something like that. But this is definitely the last episode before the next one. I can say that much. And it's a pleasure to have you with us. We were all at the game on Sunday. I've been having a real problem with getting my head around the fact that it was a Sunday yesterday. I kept thinking it was Saturday, and I kept thinking today was Sunday. Real nightmare. But anyway, it is Monday. The game was yesterday, Sunday, and we were all there. We didn't, Peter, we didn't see each other then, so I'm going to get all your views on the match first time from you in a moment. Raymond, I did see you, of course, at the game, post-match and pre-match. And it was a great day out, wasn't it? Fantastic. Did you enjoy the pre-match in Hayward's Heath as well?
I thought Hayward's Heath was very good. I have to say that the size of the helpings is the sort of size I used to get up in Yorkshire when I was at school. And it's all this idea of nouveau cuisine, where you pay more for less, I have to say was knocked on the head by the Lockhart Tavern in Hayward's Heath. Good range of beers. Anybody wants a good thing and really good value for money for the food. And if you want a decent sized portion, you're certainly going to get it now.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is though, Raymond, I'm not sure you're ever satisfied because you were stealing someone else's lunch, first of all, weren't you?
Well, actually, something went wrong on the ordering and somebody else ended up with the lamb and I ended up with the beef, which is what I wanted in the first place. But it was good. And the service was efficient and, we had a good time, and it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I drove over to the Amex afterwards to the Bridge car park, and it took us just over half an hour, but it was sort of fairly seamless and easy. So, that was good. And the rest of you, of course, fought on the train
and had lots of shenanigans. Yes, that's right. It was good fun, actually. It was a good bit of banter. And the thing with the Sunday lunch, I really can't get my head around it. It was Sunday. So when they had all the roast offers, I thought, oh yeah, it's Sunday. Really, really having problems with that. But anyway, it was a good day. I think we set ourselves up nicely, ready for the match action. And despite the fact we went a goal down in this game, very disappointingly, late in the first half, it all ended up well in the end. What did you make of the game, Raymond? You've got your hand up.
I think we were all nicely set up for the game. I wasn't so convinced that we were well set up for the game, at least the Albion, judging on the first half performance, because other than one spell from about 10 to about 18 minutes, I felt that West Ham were the stronger side and looked more organised. And I think, they... If either side was going to be ahead, West Ham deserved to be. We were having difficulties, and it was the two tactical changes, I think, that Potter made at half-time made a difference.
Mm. Yeah, it really did. And I think we came out all guns firing as well, which made for a pretty good start to the second half and a good recovery. Peter, I'll come to you in a second. Just to say the lineups for Sanchez in goal, we had Veltman, Webster, Dunk, Cucurella at the back with Grosch, Bissouma, Pesedo, March, McAllister, and well back up top. So no Trossard. He wasn't in the team at all. We think it was a minor calf injury that might have kept him out. We did use all three subs later in the game. Morpay came on half time for Bissouma, which is an early one, which is obviously feeds into what you just said, Raymond, about changing things up. We had Lamptey on for March on 75 and Wepu came on for Caicedo on 79. Anyway, Peter, yes, over to you, sir.
I was just going to say, I agree with Raymond that West Ham were the better team first half, but I don't think they really created anything. If you look at the stats, they had two shots on target and I think the other one was pretty much straight at Sanchez other than the goal. The goal looked a pretty clear foul, both at the game and replay as well. Dunks in the air and Antonio barges him basically, and it's a follow, and that's a brilliant finish. Another one where you look at it and you think, well, what's VAR doing really? Why are they not, asking the referee to go and look at that again? Because it looked to me like it was definitely a foul. So, I mean, I'm not sure West Ham actually deserved to be ahead at halftime, because for all their high press and putting us under pressure, they didn't actually create anything much really except the goal. And then second half, it was a completely different game. And from what I heard, Bissouma might have been ill during the week, I read somewhere, which explains A, why he wasn't quite with it in the first half, and B, why he was substituted at half time. But it was then brave to bring on Mopay, and from the first minute of that half, we were all over them. I thought we pressed them high. They looked like it was very odd, I thought, from Moyes, because they obviously were quite tired. They obviously played quite a few games. They played a high press, which obviously is quite tiring anyway. And then he didn't make any subs until just after we went 2-1 up and 10 minutes to go, which was a very odd decision in my mind. We know obviously still wanted to get Europa League football. So he was moaning about his players and saying they didn't give their, you know, didn't give enough for him. But actually, I'd say he should take a share of the blame there because he didn't make any changes. We dominated the half for 35 minutes and it took us going 2-1 up for him to make all three changes in one, which is a bit of a desperate measure, really, to be honest, as I said. So I think he shares as much the blame from the West Ham side as anything else. But yeah, Potter got it completely right second half. We pushed them high up the pitch. We put them under pressure. And our defence, really, you know, we should have scored a couple more probably, arguably. Welbeck headed straight at the keeper when he should have done better. He also missed the chance on angle where he arguably could have scored as well. There's one or two other decent chances as well. And we had some shots blocked as well. So yeah, I think we could, yeah, if anything, the 3-1 in the end flattered them. And in a way, I was actually more positive about that than the Man U game, mainly because we were without Trossard and then Bissouma the second half, and we still performed like that, eventually against a team who were slightly potentially tired. But still, you know, we played like that second half without two of our key players, one of whom is probably going to be gone next season, and maybe the other one possibly. So,
Raymond?
I was just going to say that in the first half, Webster seemed to be playing in the middle of the three at the back, and he didn't look that confident. He always, when he comes back from injury, seems to take several matches before he gets back up to speed. And that was noticeable. And he seemed to be slowing things down from the back. And at half, not at half time, but just a few minutes after half time, I noticed that Webster moved to the left of the three with Duncan in the centre. The result was that we were suddenly moving the ball out of defence that much quicker. And that made the difference. I thought we missed Trossard, because Trossard, people don't always notice, and I had a covering back he was doing on the left side in front of Cucurella. Mm. And Cucurella wasn't getting that shielding, you know, that extra support, yesterday, because there wasn't anybody playing in an advanced position on the left. And you know, I think that made a difference. And I think I felt that the Webster one made more difference than the other change, which obviously bringing on more pay. I thought McAllister did very well, by the way, when he went into the deeper position and was actually more effective than he had been further forward. I mean, Bissouma, I take your point. He had moments, but he wasn't as strong as he had been, I think, Peter, in other recent games. But I think Morpay then putting their centre-backs under more pressure, having both Welbeck and Morpay sort of pressuring them higher up the pitch, I think made a difference. And it also meant that, is it Koufal? He had so much time and space in the first half, which he didn't get in the second half, which I think made a lot of difference to them. Every time they wanted an outlet, he was there with, you know, with half the Amex pitch open to him. On the other hand, I thought we did a very good job on Bowen.
Mm. Yeah. England's new hope, as some are describing him, is likely to feature maybe in the World Cup. We don't know yet whether that'll be the case or not. We have kept some other England players quiet, haven't we, like Kane? But he was kept really quiet, Bowen.
What it's worth, sorry, we had 18 shots in the game. I mean, that's high number of shots.
Most of the second half, probably.
But since the Norwich game, the last Norwich game at home, where we had, I don't know, a ridiculous number of shots, up to like 30, we suddenly started scoring goals. You know, we scored something like 11 goals in whatever it was, 8 games, but it's, there was suddenly a whole change. I mean, 3 against Wolves, 3 against West Ham, 4 against,
Man United.
Obviously, we scored also against Southampton, and one against Leeds. So there's, you know, suddenly, those extra chances that we weren't burying before, we were. And I think the exception to that was the game against Leeds, where we could have certainly, I think, buried more than we did.
Yeah. And the goals are coming from all over, which is what I've always said we needed. And I do think Graham Potter's system is built not so much around strikers. It's quite similar to what Man City are doing overall, in terms of they're not relying on a striker, and they've got They're trying to dominate the possession and get the goals coming from wherever. And obviously we've been nowhere near as good as Man City at doing that element of it. However, now that we are getting some goals, they are coming from all over, aren't they? Caicedo, we've had Mwepu, we've had obviously Basuma's managed to get a goal and his strike rates are not great. And obviously Pascal Grosch has come into it. Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, the Danny Welbecks of this world have weighed in, with a couple more goals as well. And that's been the key. That's been the difference. And if we can continue to work and function successfully in that regard, we don't have to worry too much about strikers. I do think we'll sign a striker probably, regardless of whether Morpé, goes anywhere or not. Because we do need options. We need to have different ways we can play. But I do think Graham Potter would like and favour playing in a way that involves the midfield having a greater degree of significance in the attacking third. It's particularly in terms of shots. And we did have more shots on and off target than West Ham. That was the significant difference in the stats. We had exactly the same amount of possession, according to the BBC site anyway. And, you know, most of the other stats were pretty much on a par. But we'd obviously created more opportunities, which is great to see. And we mentioned the first half. With the goal, I mean, Peter, you've said definite foul. I've had a look at it. At the time, I actually missed the goal because I sneaked off early to the loo. I've got a habit of missing goals at the moment at the Amex. But I missed it firsthand, had a look at it on TV since. And I do think I could see why they might have just brushed over it a bit because from certain angles, it looks a bit weak, like it wasn't strong enough. But because he's jumped in the air and then been fouled while he's in the air, that's very similar to the Sheffield Wednesday playoff scenario, isn't it? Where he was airborne. He was pushed, but much more deliberately than the West Ham one, to be fair. And subsequently couldn't get to the ball where he would have been able to. The ball, by chance, landed in the goal directly for what should have been a cross. In this particular instance, it's Antonio challenging with Dunk. Dunk goes over. A cracking shot from Antonio, to be fair to him. But nonetheless, yes, it looked like a foul to me. Was it a matter of it not being clear and obvious enough in the referee's eyes or the VAR's eyes? I don't know. I'm not sure. It seemed a bit harsh.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad as the Mope one against Burnley, but it's just like literally when he shoved him two-handed in the chest. But to me, it was. I mean, I think the fact if he's on the ground, I get why they didn't give it. But because he's in the air, I think it should have been given because even a slightest push in the air, as with Cucurella against Southampton as well, when he was jumping and the guy kind of shoved him or whatever and got away with it as well. And I think if you're in the air, you can't touch a player because it's not like, if it's on the ground, you go shoulder to shoulder. But if they're in the air already, it kind of any touch will put them off and it's not. Unless you're jumping for it. But if you're on the ground and pushing them like Antonio did well. I think it should have been a foul.
Raymond, it doesn't seem right. I think I'd agree with Peter. It doesn't seem right to be able to do that. But is it permissible actually to have a milder effect on a player because he's in the air and you get away with it? I don't know what the rules are on that, but what did you make of the incident anyway?
Well, I mean, my it's interesting, different sport, but rugby. So if a player's sitting in the air going for the ball and a player takes him out, unless he's actually seen to be challenging for the ball with his eyes on the ball, that's a penalty. Wherever it's on the pitch. Now, I'm not suggesting that, but it's and I think it could certainly be a free kick. But one wonders if a bit of fine tuning of the law that actually they should look, if somebody goes into a player who's in the air and he isn't challenging, I think he has to be careful how he does it. Because the player could land awkwardly, break a limb, any number of things. So I think there is a even if you're playing a game and it's a contact sport, there is an element of a duty of care. And I just wonder if that there should be something in the rules about if a player is already in the air and you move into him effectively, whether that should be a free kick or something like that. I think it's something perhaps that the authorities could look at. If they're going to be worried about concussions, which quite rightly they are, I think you've got to also look at that. And I think that quite a lot of times people get knocked in the air and land awkwardly and are badly injured. So it is an area of the game I think they should perhaps examine.
Yeah. It's a difficult one. Irritating to concede like that. And if it had have cost us, for example, if we hadn't been able to get back into the game, if the dynamics from there had gone differently, you know, it could have cost us anything up to nearly £9 million in terms of positions in the table, dependent on other results. We could have finished anywhere from 8th to, is it 13th or 14th?
I think it was
14th. Mm. So 6 positions, we're talking, talking over 10 million.
I think it was 13 was the difference between the two. Obviously, we didn't quite get to the highest point of that in the end. We got 11 more than we got.
I think realistically, we've probably, by turning that game around, we've probably earned ourselves about 9 mil, haven't we? Which is brilliant. Superb. But
I wouldn't mind earning myself 9 mil an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the question I would actually ask, if we hadn't conceded that goal then, would we have actually come out so possibly in the second half?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not. Maybe we would have lost the game if we didn't concede that goal. As it might have been a whole different dynamic coming out of the dressing rooms at half time. Maybe we'd start more flatly, being more cagey, into easing our way into the game, and then get caught out. Or something similar happened to what did happen in the first half. Who knows? Interesting. Yeah, who knows? There's so many different possibilities. We'll never know, and we never need to worry about knowing, because we did turn it round, didn't we? That second half, the 3 goals came in the 50th, 80th and 92nd minutes. Veltman, Grosch and Welbeck, respectively. The first of those goals, it was a good team game goal, wasn't it, really? Because we want to throw in very high up the pitch. Kukureya took it. There was a bit of passing about. It got fed into Grosch, who just shuffled a quick movement and got a quick cross in. The West Ham defender did get a touch to it, but could only get as far as Solly, who did pretty well, actually. Sort of like a stretched out foot to pass the ball to Veltman. And unlikely scorer though he is, he got a good hit on it in a fairly crowded box, straight at goal. Goalkeeper could do nothing other than just slow it right down. It squeezed under him and over the line. And we all went crazy. Good goal overall. I mean, good team effort, I suppose. Not the most glamorous goal, but it was a decent start to the half, wasn't it?
Yeah, and deserved as well, because we were well on top at that point. I thought that Fabianski probably should have done better, really, having got so much on it. He kind of let it slip under him, and he may have been a bit wrong blocks and a bit kind of not being able to see that well, but I still would have thought that you'd expect a Premier League goal, he would do better there, really, to be honest. I never really rated Fabianski that much. He's never been that. I've been quite surprised this season that he's been ahead of Areola, or his name was, the guy who was at Fulham last year, because he, you know, on paper, seemed a much better option, but yeah, he didn't have a great game in that sense, and yeah, that was quite a big mistake.
But on the other, he does save penalties, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's done one in phases this season. You know, his nickname was Flappy Hansky, I think, from his earlier days, and you know, I think he's improved a bit. But I'm surprised he's kept Areola out. Yeah, I think he's not the most extraordinary of goalkeepers, but you know, I do think he could have done better with that particular chance, I have to admit. Not complaining though. And we continue to have a good second half, didn't we? We were the better side, I thought. I'm trying to think if there's any particular instances in the game which stood out before we got to our second goal, which was Pascal's goal, which was a brilliantly taken shot. Set up by Welbeck as well. Again, some good build-up play, lots of interplay between players just on the edge of the box. And, yeah, Grosch just on the turn, hit it with his left foot, top corner, beautiful, lovely goal. He's really stepped on, hasn't he, in the latter part of this season. There's quite a few renditions of Pascal Gross, we want you to stay, ringing out around the ground. We think he's on the brink of signing a new deal, because that's what Graham Potter said, also with Danny Welbeck. But there have been a lot of rumours of him moving back to Germany, and I think he did state somewhere that he was kind of feeling a bit homesick here and there. So we're not 100% sure what's happening, but it does seem like he might stay. And on the basis of his last third of season form, maybe half season form, he's been on fire, hasn't he? Raymond, what would you like to see? Would you like to see him stay anyway?
I think he gives us some control, which I'm not sure any of the other midfielders give us quite the same control in midfield. And particularly if Bissouma goes, which I assume is happening partly from sort of the way he came out at the end of the match when all the players came out. But and one may be wrong, but we've got that impression. Because Bissouma does the good defensive work, the interceptions, the tackles, changes the dynamic, brings the ball forward. but Grace is the one player who can sort of be on the ball and hold it and create space and is not afraid of taking time when he needs to or moving the ball quickly when he needs to. And none of the other players have quite that same degree of control.
He's a technician and he's an intelligent player as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think that is. I mean, you get sort of, I mean, McAllister's an excellent technician, but he hasn't got quite that same vision yet. And I'm not saying he won't get it, but he hasn't as yet. He can still hit a dynamic pass, McAllister, in the same way that Gross can. But he hasn't got, I think it's just that experience of reading games. He played X number of games with McAllister because of his age, just simply hasn't. It makes a difference. And with Adam Lallana, I'm just not sure about his fitness. So having an older, wiser head who can go into midfield, slow the game down if it needs to, I hope he stays. I mean, you know, if he could stay a season, I think it would help. But what we don't want to do is be breaking up the team just when it's beginning to gel and come together. And going back to an earlier thing, I mean, Potter I felt had his best back three, the most fluid back three, when we were playing some of our best football, was with the Veltman, Dunk, Cucurella back three. And in a funny way, I thought we lost a bit when we brought in Webster. I mean, you know, it sounds strange, but that isn't what I would have said 6 months ago.
No, partly due to match sharpness and all the other stuff, but partly to do with, as you said, the configuration of the team, but how well they're jamming.
But also people like Casido rarely passes the ball back, sideways occasionally, but he nearly always moves the ball on and moves it forward. Mwepo is much the same. I mean, we suddenly seem to be playing a sort of Potter ball in a slightly more positive way. We seem to be, in the last few games, moving it forward that bit quicker. The passing is just that bit faster than it has been, and we've been creating space, which I think is actually what's led to the goals. Mm. And I think, you know, it's another conversation for another day, or for later today perhaps, but you know, where we strengthen and where we do it, or who we bring back in who's been out on loan, we need those sort of players who can fit into what we're doing now as opposed to what we were doing in the first half of the season.
Mm.
Yeah, so to pick up on a couple of points, I think the goal point, I thought it was a really nice goal, that second goal. The one-touch stuff to play around the area into Grosch, and obviously the finish was, with his wrong foot, was superb. But on Grosch, you mentioned Lallana. I think part of the problem early in the season was that he and Lallana were playing together, and they don't have the pace to offer the two of them to do that, especially someone like Palace, where they didn't really have anyone else in central midfield, it's just the two of them, and they didn't have the options, and that's where it doesn't work, because they're two. But with the other players around, like Casado, like Mwepu, like Bissouma, who've got the pace to cover for them, then someone like Grosch, or I think if he's fit enough, Lallana on his own rather than with Grosch, could work pretty well. I think they're quite good options, but I don't think playing together, they're too slow in the middle of the park and they slow the ball down too much.
Mm.
I think one of them's needed to provide control at times, and certainly there are games where we need for someone like that. I'd say especially games where maybe your team's sitting deep a bit sometimes, and we need to kind of break them down. Yesterday, for example, West Ham, we were putting a few balls in the box in the first half. We were never going to score from a header, from a cross. I know we did in the corner at the end, but generally I didn't think we were, because they've got two dominant centre-backs, and we're, you know, Welbeck, although he's decent in the air, it's hard to compete against those two. Where we were getting quite a lot of, you know, even in the first half, when we were struggling a bit, was the quick ball forward and trying to break through them. And we, yeah, the final ball wasn't that great in the first half, but we had chances through that. And that's what we do at well, second half, the quick movement, the movement in and around their area, like we did for the second goal. And it worked really well, and to agree the first one as well, because Veltman found the space. And West Ham's, I'd say the pairing of Zouma and Dawson are pretty lumbering. You know, they're decent players, but they're not. It's all Zouma, of course, who got abused the whole game, which was quite funny. Obviously, there are a lot of well, cat fans in the ground.
Yeah, I think so. There were a couple of inflatable cats apparently somewhere. I don't know. He's still getting a dog's abuse, or rather cat's abuse in this case, for that, isn't he? Yeah.
He's probably getting support from dogs, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Yeah. But, sorry, Raymond, well, yeah.
Sorry, one thought about Grosch. It's the first time I can remember him scoring with his left foot. He may well have done. I just wonder, when he turned the swivel onto his left foot, and I spectacular, and I just wondered how many goals he might have scored if he'd started shooting his left foot sooner.
Yeah, because I mean that shot as well, it's so easy to get that wrong, isn't it? When you're turning and swiveling and shooting, usually it gets spooned wide, it sort of curves off, doesn't it? To get that degree of accuracy with that foot, yeah, I'm all in favour of seeing some more of that, I have to say. And it was great, as was his assist for the injury time icing on the Cape goal. Welbeck, 2 minutes into injury time, heading in, Grosch's excellently delivered, perfectly placed corner. Pretty good stuff, Peter.
Yeah, West Ham had lost it by then, and once they went 2-1 down, they just looked like they'd given up. They needed to win, and they weren't going to win from there. So Welbeck should have scored earlier with that header, but 2-1, and it was like, you already hit it straight at the keeper. Anywhere else but that was 3-1 at that point. But yeah, it was actually probably a much harder header actually from the corner, because it was angling it back across, but he took it really well. And yeah, I mean, it was nice to second 3-0, second half win in a row at home, which is pretty good.
Welbeck almost seems to do the harder finishes better, and the ones he should score, he doesn't, because that
sounds like Morpay.
Two fairly straightforward headers in successive games.
Yeah,
as he buried and didn't. I mean, the Leeds one, and obviously the one yesterday, which I thought was even easier.
At least he did hit the target yesterday, I suppose. But he still, and he should have been able to add the power. He was like, it's such a good. It was Lamptey's cross. It was a brilliant cross. And from not very much, not that promising a position as well to get it on his head. And you've got to head that down, haven't you? I know it's easy for us to say.
Oh, yeah, I think he just sent it to the goalkeeper, but he certainly came in on it. I mean, he judged it perfectly well, but he just didn't direct it in the right area. I mean, I think it'd been sort of 3 foot to the right or left, he probably would have scored. Or down, if you say.
Peter. Absolutely, and he really has added some value. But yes, there's certain chances still missed. I thought the atmosphere was very good again. That's the third game in a row where I think the atmosphere's been good, because it was good against Southampton as well as the United game. Obviously, you know, the way that the game pans out then dictates exactly how good it is. But I thought maybe the extra hour drinking for a 4 o'clock kickoff helped. I don't know. It certainly did in my case. But overall, I think it's been a lot more positive again. And it's been nice to get some decent results at home for those fans who've barely seen a win and often have not seen any goals either. I think everyone was delighted. It was good because it's the final game of the season. Of course, you know, the lap of honour and seeing players off as well. People stayed behind in larger numbers as well, of course, for that. But that was all good to see. In terms of support, by the way, and Peter, I know you wanted to have a rant about West Ham fans in a moment, but I'll start off with, in the interest of balance, of just a couple of things on the BBC comments. There's one guy on there who's a West Ham fan who said, he said gutted about today, but proud of their season, going so far in Europe with little squads, 2 years of being relegation candidates, something to be proud of and to build on. And went on to say, well played Brighton, by the way, really good team, who we may beat before I pop my clogs. I don't know how old this guy is, but they have been waiting a while, haven't they? Because it's been, I think, what's that now? 5 seasons, 10 games, unbeaten against them. And it's been great. I've quite enjoyed it. There's also one other person who put something on here. Where is it? From a Hammers fan, Brighton, what a class act on and off the field. We fluffed our lines, but Brighton are no mugs. Well played. And there's some more platitudes along the same lines. Someone else saying Graham Porter, they've said, I think they mean Potter, is a real deal of a coach and he's doing an amazing job in Brighton, et cetera. Bloody brilliant Brighton, 9th, what a season. Please turn those draws into win next season, up the Albion. That's obviously for a Brighton fan, that one. But some favourable comments from some West Ham fans, which is good to balance things out, because I've had nothing but bad experiences from the away games at West Ham. A couple of friends being assaulted, homophobia at pretty much all of the games I've been to there, including in the previous era at the Bowling Ground / Upton Park. There was a guy making an offhand comment about holding hands on the train as well, on the way down to this game. He wasn't saying it to other people. He was just sneerily saying it in amongst his friends there. And you, Peter, I think said that there was some hassles with some of the fans badly behaved at the station as well.
Yeah, there was a little bit of trouble, or not really trouble, but a couple of people acting like dickheads, basically, seemed to be West Ham fans after the guy had to leave pretty much at full time, which was, a shame to miss the post-match stuff. But yeah, there was a couple of people acting like like dickheads. I think the interesting point about the West Ham unbeaten run is that we hadn't actually won in the previous six games as well.
Yeah.
All the last six. Because our first game in six again, in six, whatever, against them. But
yeah.
So West Ham fans on Twitter, I've seen, although to be fair, not loads. This is a very minor rank compared to my normal Leeds or Newcastle ones. It's all like kind of, you know, pretty mild, but.
Well, that's far away. I've got my popcorn ready.
I've seen quite a few comments from West Ham fans saying how, expressing disbelief about how they couldn't beat Brighton and how they don't deserve the Europa League if they can't beat Brighton. And I just find it odd that any of them would think that considering they failed to beat us in nine games in the division before yesterday. I don't understand how a team that you've not beaten in nine, you can be genuinely surprised that you've not beaten again in the 10th game. It just seems really odd. And he's ended up only, what, three positions below them?
And one point them. Behind Leicester, who got to a European semi-final. So, you know, it's not as if we're not putting on weight.
It just feels like, you know, I mean, I get that the previous years we've been down in 15th, 16th, and people can underestimate us. But it still is.
So were they.
They still beat us then. So it's like, well, why would you think now that we're ninth and doing quite well that you'd beat us when you couldn't do it when we were terrible, or at least relatively terrible anyway? Poor anyway. We've been on bad runs and still not lost at West Ham. They've been 3-1 up at home to us and they've still not beaten us. Yeah, I don't understand what part of what it will take for them to be. I mean, I'm not saying they're never going to beat us or that they'll probably win the next one now, but why they come in expecting to beat us is, I find odd, because I didn't expect to beat them necessarily.
I remember some years back in the Championship, I can't remember which year it was, but they had a thumping win up there at Upton. Before they moved to the Olympic Stadium. And they beat us about 5-1 or something.
6-0 was the last time they beat us.
Yeah, 6-0. I mean,
it really was quite a thumping. So it has happened. But interesting enough, the thing I throw back at, I think, the Hammers supporters, is that only three teams in the Premier League lost less games than we did. And needless to say, they were Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea. Tottenham lost the same number. And everybody else lost more games. So from a not being beaten perspective, Brighton are fourth equal.
So even more illogical than their view. It's very weird, isn't it? It's like, I don't understand why anyone, barring maybe City Liverpool, would expect to beat us. You know, kind of given our record against the big six as well, it's pretty good. It's just, I understand that you'd want to and you'd think you should, you know, maybe kind of, but to get so annoyed of it that you go and say we should have beaten this team online is just a bit insulting. We're not like the first team up. We're not Norwich or Watford. No.
I mean, they lost 14 games. We lost 11. You know, it's, I mean, the key thing is, I think Russell, you've said in the past, is the problem we had of all the goalless draws, which we should have won. We must be the only team in the league other than Norwich who didn't score a goal against Norwich.
for example. Indeed, yeah. I mean, if we'd have got the wins that we should have done against Norwich, because they were poor in both matches, the problem was we weren't good enough, but if we'd have got those 4 points, that's basically pretty much Europe, isn't it, then? Just from that game, that fixture.
If you throw in the first game at home against Leeds, and you throw in the game against Arsenal, where we completely...
And Newcastle as well, when they were bad, and we drew at home with them.
There were, that's five games where we, you know, dropped 10 points, and 10 points Brighton would have been on 61, and thank you very much, we would have been above Manchester United and into the Europa League, so.
That would have been amazing. Can you imagine being above Man United? Peter?
Before we get too carried away with adding on a lot of points, please remember how many late equalisers we also got.
I knew this was coming.
I mean, when we kind of like equalise late on in so many games, I think to take the points we've got is probably a fair enough.
Yes, we should have
won certain games. We also could easily have lost some games as well. And, you know, ones where like Liverpool away, we probably got stuffed if Mane's goal had counted, and we'd have, you know, there are all sorts of games you can come back with. Burnley away, we should have been out of sight before. Burnley should have been out of sight at half time, 3-0 or something like that, and we could have lost it. So Leicester home, we were lucky to win because of, you know, I still think the decisions were right, but on another day, I can imagine them not being given, you know, there's a lot of this. You get what you deserve at the end of the season, generally. And we scored an awful, which is why I was a bit relaxed about Leeds last weekend, because, you know, one was always going to go against us.
But if we were going to if we've got the what I call Ferguson Manchester United habit, that is not a bad habit, you know, clawing at getting a draw in the last minute. A number of times they won matches or drew matches, you know, during the Ferguson years.
I mean,
it happened, you know, it didn't happen once a season. It happened, you know, almost every other game. And, you know, a Manchester United team weren't beaten until five seconds after the whistle had gone. And I say that advisedly after that ridiculous thing last season where they had so much extra time added on and got the winner, which they shouldn't have done. But it's, no, I mean, I think we're showing a resilience, which we haven't done in the past, and I think that's good. I'd be interested to see how we incorporate Undav if he does, because I just want to think he might have the physicality to hold the ball up closer to on the edge of the penalty area a bit and be able to lay the ball off the players coming, in a sense, like Veltman did. But yesterday, somebody running from deeper, coming up to them, but they're laying it off to them. And that might help, something like that. And it might enable Welbeck then to run the lines, get in behind, take the wider spaces.
Which he likes doing.
Which
is more central. And I think Welbeck's more effective when he's doing that.
Peter, I don't know if it's you or your cat that wanted to speak next. Is that your cat?
It wasn't my cat. It
might have been Zip came in and went out again.
Oh, Zip.
It wasn't any of my cats, surprisingly, no, for once. I was just going to say, I wasn't complaining about the fact we scored quite a lot of late goals, but I was just more saying you need to balance it out in terms of the losing. The other big, big change that we've had from the previous season, where we had the most points drop from ahead, was that we only dropped 6 points, I think it was, from winning position, which was Southampton, Leeds and Newcastle draws. And whereas we got, I think, 2 wins, Burnley and West Ham, and about 8 draws from when we went behind. The previous year was the other way around. And to be fair, this season we've gone ahead a lot fewer times, I think.
We've turned games round altogether as well, haven't we? For example, West Ham.
We've come back from behind a lot more this year. On the other hand, we weren't behind. We didn't go one down very often the previous season. Yeah. So what we need to do is balance out if we could get taking the lead from 2 years ago and keeping the lead from this season, we'd probably win the league.
Yeah.
But I think actually that last season, I know they had a player sent off, but we came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 against Man City. At Anfield this year, we were 2-0 down in the first half, came back to draw 2-2, but for a very close, but correct, offside decision, we might have won 3-2. We've come back from 3-1 to win 3-1 against West Ham, having been 1 goal down. I mean, that's not what we were doing when we first got into the PL.
Yeah, especially against the bigger teams when it was, you know, kind of we were trying to just step back and hold on to 0-0. And once we conceded, we didn't really have any option to do anything, did we? It was just kind of like try and reduce the scoreline.
The other thing with late goals, we were talking about this has been a phenomenon through the season, especially when we had this long run of draws that seemed to be happening. But we have continued to score late goals as the season's worn on. For example, we had Trossard's 90th minute winner against Spurs. A couple of games later, three games later, we won 3-0 at Wolves, but there was an 86th minute final goal there from Bissouma. And then, of course, in the West Ham United game, Welbeck 92nd minute. So we're still getting some of those late goals. This Fergie time element, you know, it does show mental resilience, mental resolve, concentration, probably fitness levels in order to achieve all of the former things I've listed there. I think that bodes well. The final word on West Ham, I think, really, because we want to move on just a couple of other subjects before we finish. Anybody you pick out as a standout man of the match for the game on Sunday? I'm not sure if I can really decide. Peter?
Veltman for me. I thought he was really good first half. Amongst a pretty ordinary performance. And then, ignoring the goal. So I wouldn't particularly give him that much credit for the goal, because I don't think it was that great a shot. It was hit quite well, but it wasn't like, you know, a brilliant finish. I think Cooper should have saved it. But just generally, I mean, the guy is like a minimum 7 out of 10 every game, but I thought he was 9.5 yesterday. And that time when he basically shrugged off Antonio in a halfway line and left him on his backside and just walked away with the ball. And the other one when he just kind of dummied about 3 times to beat three players and then just walked away and passed it calmly. He's a superb player. How on earth the idea of seeing players like him come to us about even 10 years ago was just been ridiculous. But.
And you could talk about the value of when he's cost so little, relatively speaking, the value of goals that he scored here, just one goal he scored, which turned or started to turn the game around. You know, even that alone has probably paid for his fee, hasn't it? Really, pretty much. I wouldn't disagree with your notion of Veltman. I didn't see anybody better on the pitch, I don't think. Raymond, what about you?
I mean, for me, it was Ross. I thought he played well. I agree about Veltman. I thought he played well. And, I mean, I was pleased to see he came forward and got the goal. So I feel sometimes he doesn't offer enough in attack. And a number of times he hits a ball, that sort of diagonal ball from the right flank, and it goes nowhere. Or normally goes out on the far side of the goal for a goal kick. That's the one area of his game that I think is slightly weak. Mark, you, if he had that strength, then we wouldn't have been able to buy him for £910,000. He probably would have cost something, you know, more like 20 million or something like that.
And not high for us.
I mean, you know, he just had a ridiculously low, sort of buyout clause, and we had tracked him for 2 or 3 years, and he was aware of the fact that we did. So we were able to pick him up, very cheap. I mean, fantastic value. I also thought, yet again, I thought Casido had a good game. I mean, he did one wayward pass very early on in the game, but apart from that, you know, I didn't think he didn't put a foot wrong. And he's, you know, for such a young player, just turned 20, I think. You know, he's, I mean, if he continues to develop, if that's how good he is at that age, you know, he's going to be some player. And to pick him up for £4.5 million is, you know, is another fantastic value, which may lead on to another subject. But I think a lot of the investments we have made recently, I mean, some haven't worked out, obviously, but whereas sort of 7 or 8 years ago, or even 4 or 5 years ago, we weren't buying that cleverly, we do seem to be buying much more astutely with much more of a plan of what we're doing. And getting the Modders, the McAllisters, the Kalauskas, possibly, the Undabs, the Mitomas, the Van Hecks of this world, the Carteras. I mean, we do seem to be, you know, generating a lot of young players who seem to have the technical ability and potential to really become first team players.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I think I was going to pick up on something else quickly, but while you're talking about Casado, I mean, like, he looks to me like he's played like 100 Premier League games or something like that, rather than 10 or whatever it is. So, or not even 10, is it? I mean, he looks a class above. I think was it Tim Vickery said at one point that if he was Brazilian, he'd be costed like about 10 times what he did, but because he's from Ecuador, you know, people haven't really heard of him. And the fact that we got him is just crazy. And his ceiling, I think, is a lot higher than Bissouma's. I think he'll go for a lot more money eventually, a year or two's time, maybe two, than Bissouma. Linking to what you're saying, actually, I was talking to my dad yesterday before the game. We were saying I think the first couple of seasons, we were trying to pick up players maybe at their peak, the likes of Jahan Bach and Lacardi are a bit older, like 26, 27 sort of thing, and Doné as well. But now we seem to be aiming for either younger players who've got promise or the more experienced Veltmans or Lallanas or whatever we can pick up maybe for a free and pay their wages. And so there's a kind of like good mix of the experienced and the young, but we don't really have that many players of what you call their actual peak age in terms of games that we sign at, or that we sign at their peak age anyway. And it seems to be a transfer policy. The one other thing I'll quickly say about in terms of players from yesterday, I think it's worth a mention because he's had a bit of up and down run recently, and he's got quite a lot of stick from certain people on BBC Sussex rather unfairly as well. But I thought Mope was superb second half yesterday. He was one of the big differences, and he hassled their defence and he caused some problems, and they couldn't deal with him and Welbeck together. And he was one of the big reasons that we got back into the game. And yeah, he seems to have got a lot of stick from certain people, fans, and also Warren Aspinall for whatever reason, and it showed that he is still very much, you know, keen to play for the club and wants to, you know, be part of it. And I was really pleased to see him come on, and shame he couldn't have got a goal, but it was good to see him come on and really contribute.
Yeah, but good point.
I'd second that, actually. I know Roger Bevan would not necessarily agree with one, but actually I thought, coming back to what one said earlier, the fact we had two people pressing their central defenders and people, I think did have an effect.
Yeah. Roger being the Seagulls of London chairman, by the way, for anyone that doesn't know, we're talking about that. He's not a big fan of Morpay, but I'm in mixed views on him. I've got some stats, actually, which I think bear out quite interestingly. I've looked at the goal scorers this season. I think this encompasses all competitions. Morpay is our top scorer still with 9 goals and 2 assists. Second is Trossard, only one behind, and he might have equaled it if he'd been available. He's got 8 and 3 assists. And then you've got Danny Welbeck is now up onto 6 with 2 assists. McAllister, 5 with 4. Enoch Mwepu, 3 with 5 assists. And then you've got Webster, 3 goals, no assist. And then a load of people on smaller scoring. Jakub Mora, Pascal Grosch, Yves Bissouma, Aaron Connolly, believe it or not, all on 2 for the season. And the rest are 17 scorers altogether. The others are all with 1 goal. Moises Caicedo, Marco Correa, Joel Veltman now, of course, Andy Zakiri from an earlier cup match, Dan Byrne, Shane Duffy and Lewis Dunk. What I found interesting about the stats I've been looking at is Neil Morpay, the top scorer, 36% shot accuracy, however they measure that. And if you look at the next ones on the list, Trossard has 53%, Welbeck 59%, McAllister 42%, Mwepu 47%, Webster 50% shot accuracy, and then you've got Modder on 44%, Grosch on 45%. That tells you where the real technicians are in this, I think. Bissouma 35%. That's how far down you have to go to kind of the ninth on the list to get someone with a lower shot accuracy than Neil Morpay. He does have to have a few chances to get some in, doesn't he? Connolly's, incidentally, was 50%, which is interesting. But Moises Caicedo is top with 67% shot accuracy. Another reason why he's going to be an exciting and possibly even improving presence on Bissouma if Bissouma does go, because I think that's the one area where Eve is weak, isn't it, really, with shot accuracy. He's only got a couple of goals there that we mentioned. One of those was a deflected goal against Spurs.
He tends to miss spectacularly as well, rather than... Yes, yeah, whereas Modder, I think, generally gets quite close and often just hit the bar and that sort of thing, and, it's been unlucky. Yeah. Bissouma tends to be more dangerous to Rose Ed than he does to the goal.
Yeah, and those defenders, interesting, just looking at that in isolation, our centre-back, Webster 50%, Veltman 50%, by the way, Dan Byrne 50%, and Lewis Dunk 54%. So they don't get as many chances maybe as they should have done over the course of the season, but when they have had them, they've got them on target, which is good. Good to see. Any thoughts on that, Raymond?
Well, I don't actually know how many, of course, the difficulty there, how many shots they've had. If you've only had 6 shots, you might have got 3 on target. The 50% sounds more impressive than if you've...
I have got the stats for that, but it might be a bit long-winded to go through them all.
If you've had 50 shots and had 25 on target, so it's...
Dunk's had 13 shots. I presume this includes headers as well. So that's pretty impressive, for example. Dan Byrne only had 8. Moises Caicedo 6. And... who was it on Webster has had 8 attempts as well, so not bad. The highest number of shots, by the way, if you're interested while we're on the subject, is Trossard with 51, and he's got the 53% ratio. Neil Morpay just behind on 50 shots and 36% ratio, 18% goal conversion, which is not too far off a par with everyone else. I think that actual element is okay. Webster's is, I think, the highest goal conversion rate with 38%, which is interesting, followed by Aaron Connolly, would you believe? Interesting stats in there sometimes, I think, when you look at that. It makes you wonder what Neil Morpay's role is going to be going forward. If he can play as he did in that second half yesterday and in some of the other games he's played, that would certainly help. I think he'll remain a squad member from our point of view if he's happy to stay. I think we'll keep him on and he would form part of our front line. But I do think competition for places might help. Maybe he's fired up in that second half by the fact that he's not been getting much game time, as Danny Welbeck's been fit and available and on form. And next season, of course, we'll have Undav as well. I don't think we'll have Aaron Connolly back. that's my solid prediction. But yeah, interesting stuff. Who knows? Who knows where it goes? Well, unless there's any more points on that, just wanted to finish by talking about the. Oh, hang on. No, there isn't. There is a point. Raymond, over to you.
I just think that Morpay, to me, always seems to play better when he's playing alongside somebody. Yeah. Not as the main striker. So I don't really think he is a typical number nine. And I think I feel he plays better off somebody. And I've always felt he's looked more dangerous when he's playing with Welbeck. Yeah. I consistently felt that because their movement is different apart from, they run different lines and that sort of thing. And Morpay is the better presser, I think, and starting our defence from the opposition's penalty area. So I feel they work quite well together.
Mm. I agree with that. Yeah. He is better, isn't he, in a two? And he has done well. He's linked up well with Danny Welbeck on a number of occasions. Just moving things on then, just to the final subject, which is really summary of the rest of the Premier League season. And we will also mention Sunderland. Congratulations to them. They've finally managed to get out of the League One quandary they've been in for 4 or 5 years. A 2-0 win over Wickham, I think, was deserved on the day. But as far as the Premier League went, the following day, the Sunday, obviously we talked about the Albion game. We've had quite a bit of drama, haven't we, going on? I mean, the Man City-Liverpool title race took on some amazing stories. In the end, it was City that were able to hold on to that lead in the table. 1 point ahead at start of play. They just needed to match Liverpool's results. And they decided to go 2-0 down at home to Liverpool's own Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa team. Meantime, Liverpool didn't seem capable of beating what has been in recent weeks a poor Wolves side. I think they've won all for quite a long time. I've lost track of the timeline a bit because of following our game, but
Liverpool went ahead, I think, was the...
Yeah.
Liverpool were never in top position at all.
No, because it was just a matter of when they were 1-1 and City were 2-0, you think, well... You know, this could, all they've got to do is score now, and it's likely to happen. But of course, what happened was City scored 3 goals in about 5 minutes or something, didn't they? To turn it round, incredible. I think 2 goals in 1 minute, I think, as well, along the way. To clinch it, Gundogan with his second goal, I think, making the difference, the Aguero moment, I suppose, of this season. Liverpool ending up 3-1 winners. No surprise, really. I thought the moment Man City got knocked out of the Champions League that was a nailed-on certainty they were going to win the Premier League. They weren't, and they probably shouldn't be going without a trophy this season. They are a magnificent side of incredible standard. For them to have been trophyless this season would have felt like a crime, really, wouldn't it? And I think they deserve it. You know, you just go on the table in the end. Very, very close, though. And Liverpool... had already got 2 trophies in the bag, and they've, of course, got the possibility of getting revenge on Real Madrid in the Champions League final this coming Saturday. Good luck to them. I hope the English team win on this occasion. I can't stand Real Madrid, another one on my list. So for that reason alone, I'd love to see Liverpool win it. It would also make things a bit more interesting in the overall winning stats, you know, getting closer to Real, who are the top dogs, aren't they, with 13, is it? I think, and Liverpool are on 6. So I'd like to see that gap close a little bit as well. But congratulations to Man City. Brilliant season. And what a manager, what a team. What an era, really, with the two clubs. It's been absolutely incredible. I don't know if you guys have got any comments on that, or do you want to get straight into talking about the disappointment, Peter, at the bottom of the table?
Yeah, not really.
Yes, Peter's favourite team, unfortunately, or everyone's second favourite team, according to Martin Kewan, created what also, according to Martin Kewan, is one of the greatest escapes ever. Yes, Leeds that have been in the relegation zone for about 5 seconds managed to pull their way out in apparently the greatest ever escape. You've got to love Martin Kewan. I mean, Leeds didn't need a late winner in the end because Burnley were losing, but they did finish it off in injury time. Apparently, limbs all over the place in the Brentford away end there.
They were a bit behind they were a bit ahead of the Burnley game, so it was actually an important goal. So
I think was it?
Burnley were a couple of minutes behind, I think, finishing. So if Leeds had ended at 1-1, then Burnley would have had 2 minutes maybe to kind of really throw everything at it, whereas obviously the the goal kind of meant they gave up or whatever. It's that's what I got from watching Match of the Day anyway, I think, last night. And they had the kind of two running concurrently, and they were, I think Burnley were a couple of minutes behind them.
Yeah. And tragically, we do therefore lose Burnley. What a shame. What a shame.
I'm never going to Burnley again in my life. I wish soon.
There was someone put something on social media with a picture of the White Lives Matter banner that was flown above the ground during the Black Lives Matter stuff that was going on, saying all relegations matter in the post, which I thought was quite funny. But you know, they go with our blessing, don't they, Peter? Goodbye.
They might struggle to come back up again. They've got this weird thing where they owe their owners like 60 million quid or something like that.
Which was a condition of the buyouts. They borrowed money against them.
They're losing Tarkowski on a free. I imagine they're probably going to lose Pope, Cornet, who I actually think we could be interested in, actually. If I'm not convinced we're going to get a higher up. If he plays further forward, he could still play with Cucurella, but also cover Cucurella's position when he's not available or something like that. So I wonder if he might be able to kind of take target. McNeil, I think, will go as well.
I think they're
going to struggle next year maybe to come straight back up again.
And would this be the moment where now Dyche having gone is bad news? I think it seems to have turned things around, but would Dyche be better suited, having won a promotion before from that division, to have been the person to take them forward? Who knows?
Can I just make one more point? Well, it's really amusing to think that we're actually now much better off than all three teams who screws over promotion that year. Burnley for the Barton stamp when he should have been sent off in that 2-2 draw. Middlesbrough for the sending off of Stevens,
and the pitch of
Wednesday for the playoff stuff. All three of them are worse off than us now. So, entertaining point.
Yeah, very much so. Raymond?
I was going to say that I think in terms of the Burnley Leeds thing, I almost wanted both teams to go down, as I was saying earlier. But the point of Peter sort of cornet, Russell and I, some weeks ago, were having a conversation about Cornet, saying that he's just the sort of player, he's got the versatility, and I suspect he could play on the right as well as the left. And if we could have another, sort of somebody who can play wing back, sort of full back, who can play further forward, so we're not just dependent on Lamptey March, who isn't really a sort of defender, but can do a job at wing back, and Cucurella, who it's a question of playing quicker in his best place. We need to strengthen that position. And Cornet, could not only help cover that, but he could also, offer something else in other positions. And I think would be well worthwhile. Whether Burnley would want to sell it, well, I think there's a moot point. And
would they have a choice, really, with the finances? Who knows? I think they are in some degree of trouble, actually, Burnley. And he might well add something, Cornet. Yeah.
He is the one who thought he was on loan there as well. So maybe I think he'll probably be pushing to leave.
he said he wants to go back to his mother club. I think, hang on a minute. You signed a 5-year permanent deal, mate. That's quite a classic.
It really doesn't give you, you hear about these stories and you think footballers don't do themselves any favours sometimes.
He's not the brightest spot. He also pointed to the kit manufacturer's logo instead of the badge when he was posing for the pre-match photo shoot as well.
Yeah, but he'd have at least one other French speaker in Morpé, wouldn't he? So that would
help. Indeed.
I wonder to what extent Burnley invest in the sort of thing Brighton do with Cucurella, which is having two lessons each week on English for the family. I mean, I'm sure they would do it, but twice a week? I just wonder whether Burnley would have had would have done it or just done once a week and
And if he did, would you speak English in a northern accent then?
Maybe. Speaking of Cucurella, you looked magnificent in your wig, or someone else's wig that was plonked on your head, Raymond, on Sunday. You looked very stylish, I thought. It's now the banner on one of our WhatsApp groups, that picture. can we go to final subject then, really? It's something we talked about off-air. The pitch invasion situation, it's been going on. There's been a lot of problems. It continued, unfortunately, with the weekend's match. Man City winning the title, exhilaration, genuine emotion spilling over, etc. And fans spilling out onto the pitch happened. The crossbars got broken. One of them got broken. The other one nearly got broken by fans swinging on it, apparently. I haven't seen the footage of that, but I've been told. But unfortunately, there was another incident as well. Apparently, somebody whacked Robin Olsen, the Aston Villa goalkeeper, on the back of the head, well, on the pitch. And that was his debut, I think it was. The Villa goalie, Eze Martinez, isn't it, played every game this season. And then Olsen was given his debut at City, which is interesting, and for quite a long time was doing fine. But, yeah, he that kind of mars it a little bit for him. But it was another incident. And Raymond, you've got a rather radical, you've got a Raymondism, as we like to call them, radical notion of how this could be stopped.
My normal solution, as you know, for other things, is if clubs transgress on something like financial fair play, whatever it is actually a pointless finding. I mean, what's the point of finding, shall we say, Newcastle in the future? When all the Saudis have to do is to sell a couple more barrels of oil and they'll pay for the fine. But if you actually hit people with a deduction of points, that hurts. And if the crowd, you know, and it can be established that the person who has committed the outrage on Olsen is indeed an opposition fan and not, is a Man City fan. Yeah.
He's not a naughty Man U fan deliberately getting them a points deduction, is what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, but you actually, just deduct them the points. I just say, all right, it would have been a win, but your fans actually transgress, so you don't get that 3 points. Tough titty, you don't win the Premier League, and that's it. And obviously you get slightly lower prize money, so there's a small fine in there as well. And I think...
You imagine how popular that guy would be then in that situation.
I just feel that the fans, I mean, you've got to obviously make sure that it is not somebody trying to pretend to be, but it is a genuine situation. But having established that I think the fines, a points deduction is more effective. I really do. I know that, others like our chief executive and vice chairman, might share my sentiment, but doesn't think one could do it. And I came up with a scenario last year, if you remember, where Manchester City would have been relegated after about the first 5 matches because of their questionable things on financial fair play, and it wouldn't have mattered how many matches they won, they still would have got relegated. But that's beside the point. I think sort of sensible points deductions will make people behave, and I think a lot of people behave properly at the end of the season. I know they haven't, nobody else other than Man City had won the title. And I can understand the euphoria when somebody does something for the first time, but Man City are becoming a bit of a habit of winning the Premier League at the moment. So I think a message has to be sent somehow to them, and I'm not sure what it is. I think the points would be the most effective, but I'm not sure that people would wear that, and obviously would they challenge the decision in the courts, etc., etc. But fines,
it could get very messy, couldn't it? I mean, look at the Forest situation. If they weren't allowed to have any fans at Wembley, or they had to replay the match or something, can you imagine? It's a minefield. It is a growing problem. It's being acknowledged, and clear signs are being made by the FA and other authorities that they're going to clamp down on this. It's a shame for the spectacle and for all the decent fans who are just trying to have a celebration. There's people spoiling it, but it seems to have happened in 4 or 5 of the recent climactic games this season, which is very disappointing. But yes, Raymond, your system could become very interesting.
Maybe just go back to the old days, the stocks, and just start throwing coins at them into the stocks.
what they were saying on Match of the Day yesterday, I think it's Match of the Day, but recently, is that this is, it might be on the news, a sudden thing that started happening again since COVID. It wasn't happening to that extent before COVID, and with a return of people coming back to the ground, whether something has, some dynamic has changed, which is causing them to do that, whether it's a form of release because of all the lockdown and the isolation, I don't know. And
I think it's an excuse. I think we've become more lawless. I think people have taken liberties a lot more, thinking, sod it, we'll do what we want. Yeah. Everyone else is. I think it's more than that.
Etc. Yeah, it sets an example, doesn't it? So, at what point do you, yes, you might not have been too bad, but, if you set an example, you've got to suffer for it. But you were talking about the West Ham fans earlier. I went to several matches in days gone by at Upton Park by myself, and I never had any problem. And I have been more aware, but on the few occasions I've been to the Olympic Park, a couple, two or three, that fans are not behaving as well since they moved stadia. And I don't know if that's something anybody else has noticed, or whether I've just happened to have experienced it, and it's not, but whether there's been a change in the sort of West Ham fan mentality. But I always thought them as playing good football under, you know, Jeff Hurst, Bobby Moore, et al.
Yeah, I think, well, I can't speak for that era, but I certainly the latter days of the Upton Park era, they were just as bad, really. They were throwing tea and other stuff from the upper tier onto fans, homophobic abuse each time, sneery kind of behaviour as well outside the ground, pockets of trouble as well on occasion, I've heard about, including some Brighton fans being attacked in a pub, I think, on one occasion. So, yeah, I don't think there's been an overall behavioural change. You may have, yeah, as I said, you may have just noticed it by chance. You happen to have been nearer to something than before, but no, I think...
And also, you have to go past it on the way now, don't you? It's not a walk away straight from the ground. You've got to walk all the way round and pick up all the West Ham fans on the way. So you have to walk around the ground to get anywhere, which means that you're probably going to see any trouble there is, whereas before you could just walk straight away one way or the other and
oblivious.
Trouble was the other direction, then you wouldn't have seen it.
True, yeah. Well, anyway, sorry, go on, Raymond, yeah.
No, that's a fair comment. I'll accept that. I mean, I went in the sort of late 70s, early 80s. Upton Park a lot when we were last in the top division.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't have run into more trouble at that era, right? Because that was rife with hooliganism at the time. But anyway, it is what it is. Well, we've got to round this off because it's going to be a bit of an epic length otherwise. But thank you very much, as always, for joining us, Mr. Raymond Wright, the gent. Hope you've enjoyed yourself.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me, Russell. And what a great season, and what a great last two home games to end on. 4-0 Manchester United, 3-1 West Ham. So fantastic.
Absolutely magnificent, isn't it? Thanks for joining us, Raymond. Pete, you go along with that as well. It's been a great season, hasn't it?
I mean, I think I said on last week, it's been a very odd season in a lot of ways because we've had two really poor runs. Our longest run without a win in the Premier League and our longest run of defeats in the Premier League. Yet we've come in our highest ever historical position. I mean, you couldn't make it up really, because if you told me at the start of the season we're going to have a 6-game losing streak and an 11-game run without a win, I'd have thought we'd have been like struggling at the bottom and probably, you know, maybe we've been comfortably down. But yeah, I mean, the other runs have been brilliant. You know, 4 wins out of 5, followed by 7 unbeaten over Christmas, followed by 1 defeat in 9 at the end. So we need to find a way, if we can, next season to try and end those winning losing streaks more. We've kind of run out of places, but generally you can't ask for more. 9th place is phenomenal, and
And if we can do that, that could be the difference squeezing up towards the European places. Let's hope so. The main thing is that we can at least achieve what we did this season, next season again, at the basis. Finishing above Palace, being top half, I'm happy with that, to be honest. However, if we can manage to get into Europe, bonus, absolute bonus. Anyway, thank you again to Raymond.
Comment is that I thought Ian Wright, Wrighty, did point out, and they were very complimentary about Brighton and the football we played. And just saying that if you could just find that person who could finish the half chances, you know, what a fault we'd be.
Yeah. And on that note, that's a good sentiment to end. So we'll be doing our review of the season, and that'll be coming up in due course. We'll also probably have a couple of other specials and things going on over the summer. We might have a bit of a break this time. I think we went all the way through last year, but we'll no doubt have a bit of break time as well during the summer, and then eventually reconvening in time for the new season. But we will be back with our review next episode. In the meantime, Peter, stand or fall.
Up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.